fire to prepare their foodstuff. They set fire to start the factories, etc. So many things are done with the help of fire. Therefore, sunrise, fire, and moonlight are so pleasing to the living entities. Without their help, no living entity can live. So, if one can understand that the light and the splendor of the sun, moon, and fire are emanating from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, then one's Krishna consciousness will begin. By the moonshine, all the vegetables are nourished. The moonshine is so pleasing that people can easily understand that they are living by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna. Without His mercy, there cannot be sun. Without His mercy, there cannot be moon. And without His mercy, there cannot be fire. And without the help of the sun, moon, and fire, no one can live. These are some thoughts to provoke Krishna consciousness in the conditioned soul. Hare Krishna. Generally, people ask a question, have you seen God? And here, Krishna is explaining how to see Him. He is the source of the splendor of the sun, moon, and fire. No lamp that has been made by man can match the magnificence of the sun. Any lamp that we take in this world must have a support, a source of energy. It is either being suspended from a wire or it is being supported on a pivot. But something is required to hold it. But look at the sun. They say every lamp, diya tale andhera. You have heard of this word? Diya tale andhera. So every lamp will cast its shadow. But where does the sun cast a shadow of its own? No. It is absolutely suspended by the power of the Supreme Lord. Just if you look at the structure of the sun and how it is placed, that itself is enough for us to understand the splendor of the Lord. How He is revealing His splendor through each of His creation. And what is this sun? It is but a small fragment of His infinite splendor. And that sun is giving us so much energy. We can't take that much. It is explained how much of solar energy is being continuously emitted. But we are not in a position to harness even the solar energy which is abundantly and freely available. And we are talking about power crisis, shortage of energy. That is our capacity to absorb, and that is His capacity to give. There is so much of water in the ocean. How much can you take? And where can you store all the water if you take it from the ocean? There's no place for you to store that much of water. Just see what He provides and just see what is our capacity to take. This is actually showing a difference or a small glimpse of His splendor. So here He is describing the splendor of the sun, the splendor of the moon. We all know the moon is so beautiful. Always poets, philosophers, even thinkers have compared the moon to an object of beauty, or they compare any object of beauty with the moon, because when the moon rises in the sky, it is having a magnificent charm of its own. It's so charming, it's so captivating, and that beauty is indescribable. Anybody looking at the full moon in the sky is held captive by its beauty. So there you have Chaitanya Chandra, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When he appeared on this earth, he was looking so magnificently beautiful that the only way they could describe his beauty was to compare him with the moon. And they said, Chaitanya Chandra. Similarly, Lord Krishna, his beauty is unparalleled. And the nearest one could describe his beauty, they would say, Krishna Chandra. Similarly, Lord Ram, whenever the Lord incarnates, he is so beautiful. And how do people describe Lord Ram's beauty? They say Ramachandra. So this is, we can understand, even in common parlance, we are using the splendor of the moon as something that is worth appreciating. But Krishna here reveals, he says, I am the source of that splendor. And then of course, fire. We all know how fire is important for us in our daily lives. That's mentioned over here. We start the day with a fire. Even our factories, they need fire. Everywhere fire is required. In fact, as it will be revealed later, even for our digestion power, we need fire. What is that known as? What is it known as? Jathar Agni, the fire of digestion. Without that, we can't even digest the food. Then how are we going to live if we can't digest the food? We need fire to cook the food and we need fire to digest the food. At every stage, and what to speak, when one gives up this body, we need fire to burn the body. At every stage, from the beginning to the end, we are completely dependent on these natural splendors of the Supreme Lord. And yet, we think we are independent and we question the existence of God. That's what he's telling. He's exposing our foolishness. At the same time, he's revealing a small fragment of his splendor in this beautiful verse. To understand this verse properly, there is a very nice story that we can relate to. Once, Isaac Newton, we all know, is a very famous scientist. What is he famous for? The law of gravitation, yes. So we say, Newton's law of gravity, am I right? That's how we have studied in school. But did Newton create the law of gravity? It is actually Krishna's law of gravity. But still in common parlance, we say Newton's law of gravity. Okay. That is exposing our ignorance. Even there is a defiance on the part of the living entity to accept the authority and the opulence of the Supreme Lord. They ascribe that law of gravity to a common mundane scientist. But how was Isaac Newton? He was not like that. He himself was a great believer of the Lord. One incident in his life reveals how Isaac Newton was a great believer of the Lord. He explained the law of gravity and he explained how the entire solar system is maintained by the law of gravity, how all the heavenly bodies are remaining in their orbit and in their position by this law of gravity. And then he created in his laboratory a miniature of the solar system that would work on power, that had to be, you know, keyed up. You know, earlier we had this clock, we had to actually screw it up. There was a spring inside, spring-loaded clocks they call it, and then you have to actually key it up, and then afterwards when it is fully keyed up, then it will start unwinding and it will work for 24 hours, 36 hours, whatever it may be. And again you have to do it. Nowadays, of course, that concept is gone. We have cells, we have powers, power source, other things. So Newton at that time developed that pattern. You have to just, you know, wind it up and then the whole thing comes alive. It starts moving. There is the sun, then there are the planets, all made to scale. They revolve around the sun. There is a moon revolving around the earth. He had made up a beautiful, a model of the solar system. And he placed it in his laboratory. So one of his friends, a scientist, who was also an atheist, he came up and he asked him, oh, from where did this come? Who made it? So Newton just said, who made it? It just appeared on its own. He said, come on, stop joking. Don't tell me it appeared on its own. Such a beautiful scale of a model of the solar system. How could it have come of its own? Newton just knocked him on his head and asked him, my dear friend, if you can't accept that a small model of the solar system cannot come on its own, but has to be made by somebody, how can you expect that the real solar system can be come into existence without a creator? Why do you deny the existence of God? This is what he asked him. This is something which I read in my school science textbook when I was in school. So, Newton was not an atheist scientist. He was a believer. But what do we learn from this story? That Shri Shri Radha Gopinath, Shri Gopal, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. So we understand that if there is creation, there must be a creator. So, if we have so many wonderful, opulent things in this creation, how can we deny the existence of the creator? Actually, in this particular chapter, the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the material world is compared to the reflection of the banyan tree in water. That's how the chapter starts. Urdhvamulam adhashakham. So, this material world in which we are now living is illusory. Illusory means it is of a temporary nature. Just as an image which is projected on a screen is of a temporary nature, the material world is of a temporary nature. Does anybody have any doubt about this? That this is of a temporary nature? Are we looking for any proof that this is of a temporary nature? Very simple. Great historical personalities, where are they today? Where are they today? If you look into your own families, some of us may not be having our parents with us today. If not, our grandparents may not be alive today. If not, certainly the great-grandparents are not alive today. But once upon a time, they were there. They were very much there. And at that time, who would say they are not real? They were real. Just as today we are real. But 100 years from now, would any of us be existing? So if you see on the scale of time, if an image on the screen can remain for 1/16th of a second, then maybe this image of blood and flesh can remain for a few years. But it's still an image. That is why this material world is compared to an illusion, illusory material world. And therefore it is compared to the reflection. But whenever there is a reflection, there must be the object also. You can have a reflection only when there is an object. So that is what Krishna is explaining. This material world may be illusory, but that doesn't mean that there is no reality. Reality is there, and that is the spiritual world, where things are in existence eternally. And it is the temporary reflection of this eternal reality is what we see in this material world. So, on what mirror is this reflection seen? It is explained this reflection is seen on the mirror of our self-centered desire. That is how Prabhupada explains. Self-centered desire. So this is our real disease. We put ourselves in the center when we really don't have a central place. The actual center belongs to Krishna. Krishna is the center of the spiritual and the material worlds. And if we substitute ourselves in Krishna's place, then everything falls flat, cannot sustain. That is our sickness. That is our disease. That is what we have to overcome. And that is why Krishna is explaining in the 15th chapter, how to escape from this illusion. That's what he's explaining to us. How to see through this illusion. How to see through this temporary passing phase and to reach out to the reality that is existing behind that. So how to get there? And this material world is compared to a banyan tree. Why is it compared to a banyan tree? Because a banyan tree is very complicated. Actually, if you have seen some of these trees, there is one botanical garden, I believe, is it in Calcutta? There's one in Bangalore also. And if you see this kind of tree, one can really cannot make out which is the original trunk and which are the subsidiary trunks. It is spread over such a vast area that one just can't understand how far is the extent from where has it actually started. To understand this, there is a small little joke. Once a foreigner first came to India, and when he went to one of the five-star hotels, he was offered a sweet, and that was in the form of a jalebi. So for a long time he did not eat it, and somebody came and told him, "Why don't you start eating it?" He said, "I have a problem." He said, "What's your problem?" "I don't know from where to start. It is going round and round and round in circles. I don't know where it starts." So exactly the same is the condition of the material scientists. When they try to understand this creation, they are baffled. They don't know where is the origin. They can't find out from where the whole thing started. And today we find scientists are racking their brains on trying to find out the origin of the universe. They have built some huge kind of a machine somewhere recently, and costing crores and crores of rupees and involving years and years of labor, all for what? Just to break an atom. Just to break an atom, so much of effort. And this is effortlessly going on in the sun. The sun's energy is coming by nuclear fusion. But then to artificially do it, how much of botheration? But still they can't arrive at the truth. They are still speculating. How do you say they are speculating? Is it just a stretch of our imagination? Is it that we are biased and we are talking like this? Answer is very simple. Any new theory that is put up by the scientists, within 5 years, it is superseded by a new theory. And then they say, that is now obsolete, now this is the latest. This again shows the transient nature of our material science. So materially, if you try to understand the truth, you will never reach it. That is what Krishna is telling us. He says, don't waste your time. Don't waste your time in this kind of bickering, in this kind of hair splitting. It is not going to take you anywhere. He says, if you want to know the truth, if you want to understand, he says, simply turn to me. And that is why, because people are prone to only know that which is perceptible to the senses, that is, prone to be materialists. That is why Krishna is taking examples of material objects, the sun, the moon, and the fire, and explaining through these very objects that behind all these things is His splendor. He is the source of the magnificence and the splendor of these things. So that we understood in this story of Isaac Newton. Then we go to the next verse. Today we are going to do verse number 12, 13 and 14. Verse number 13, I'll quickly read it. Gama vishyacha bhutani dharayamahamojasa pushnami chaushadhi sarva somo bhutva rasatmaka. The translation is, I enter into each planet and by my energy they stay in orbit. I become the moon and thereby supply the juice of life to all vegetables. There's a very important statement which has been made by Krishna in this particular verse. And that is, he says, I enter into each planet. How do we understand this? You see, even when man launches a satellite and it has to stay in orbit, what does it need? Fuel. If the fuel is exhausted, what happens? It will fall down from its orbit, right? It cannot sustain in its orbit until and unless there is a propellant fuel to sustain it in its position. How is it then that so many planets are remaining fixed in their orbit? Where is that fuel which is sustaining them in their orbit? Material scientists are not able to explain this. They say it is there. This is known as observation. Okay, this is something you observed. Then what about your inference? What about your understanding? If an ordinary satellite cannot remain in orbit without fuel, how is it that so many heavenly bodies are remaining perfectly in their orbit? In fact, that trajectory is predicted years in advance. Years in advance. Eclipses are predicted centuries in advance. Even today, scientists are able to recall the eclipses that took place ages back, and they are able to forecast the eclipses and the heavenly phenomenon that is going to take place centuries ahead of us. So, how is it possible that they remain in perfect orbit? Here is the answer. Krishna says, I enter into these planets. It is by His power that everything is sustained in its position. We have to understand this. And then He's explaining, and what does He explain further about the moon, which is not commonly known? In science, we have understood one thing, that moon is reflecting the light of the sun. That is our material science is teaching us. But then, Vedic science is teaching us something more. It is not just that moon is only reflecting the light of the sun, but moon has a potency of its own. And what is that? You know, the various foodstuffs that we eat, vegetables, fruits, grains, they have a taste. And that taste comes from the juice which is there in these respective fruits. Where does that juice come from? Krishna says, it is by the power of the moon that this juice is supplied in all the vegetation. Actually, there is one particular custom. I believe on some Purnima day, they make sweet rice and they keep it open in the moonlight for the whole night, covered with a small net so that many mosquitoes should not fall into it. But the moonlight, the sweet rice or the kheer as you call it, is exposed to the moonlight. And the next day morning, with great relish, people consume that. Why? Because it gains a taste on being exposed to the moonlight. I don't remember the name of that Purnima. If somebody remembers, you can tell me. What is it? Sharad Purnima. Okay. So, that is it. So, such customs are there. From where do they come? What is the secret behind these traditions? Krishna is explaining it here. He says that He is the source of all taste and the moon is the supplier of the juices of all the vegetation. But from where does the moon get the power to supply this essence or this taste? Krishna says, it is from me that all these things are coming. Aham sarvasya prabho. Again, go back to the statement of Bhagavad Gita. He says, I am the master of everything and everything emanates from me. He says, explicitly he states that I am the creator. When Krishna is so explicitly stating that I am the creator, where is the need for us to break our brains and trying to find out what is the origin of the universe? Very simply you can understand that this entire universe has been created by Krishna. That is the statement of the Bhagavatam. That is the statement of the Gita. Very clearly they say, if you accept this, then we can go further. That is, if you accept the supremacy of the Lord, then it becomes easy to surrender to Him. The disease of the materialistic people is they do not want to surrender to the supremacy of the Lord, so they are creating artificial theories which cannot be sustained, and they are going round in circles, not reaching any goal, not reaching any destination, simply wasting time, but always giving you a post-dated check. In future, we will come with a solution. It is like trying to touch the horizon which will never arrive. That is that situation. This is also described as prapancha. That is why it is said this material world is a place of illusion. The more you sink into matter, it is just like being caught in a quicksand. You know what is quicksand? What do you call it in Hindi? Daldal, that is the right word. So if you want, supposing somebody is caught in quicksand, if he wants to come out of it, what should he do? Put a lot of effort, beat his hands and legs. What will happen if he does that? He will sink deeper. The only way of coming out is take support from somebody who is outside. Right? Similarly, the more you dive into material science and try to understand nature by analyzing matter, the deeper and deeper you are sinking into the intricacies and the complications, and the further and further you are going away from the solutions. So what is the way to come out? Take support from one who is outside. That means above the material platform, on the spiritual platform. And that means take support of spirituality. Therefore, Prabhupada has said, material problems and spiritual solutions. If you try to solve a material problem with another material solution, you land into a bigger material problem. Any doubt about this? Is it a stretch of imagination? Is it a jugglery of words? We have tried to solve the problem of transport by inventing automobiles. And today, we are finding ourselves in a greater mess. What is it known as? The greenhouse effect, the global warming. Today, people want to go away from the use of petroleum or fossil fuels, as it is known as, because of carbon emissions, which is a world-threatening problem today. But we are trapped. We are not able to get out of it. We don't have another solution to our transport problem. So this is what Prabhupada explains. Material problems cannot be solved by material solutions. You need spiritual guidance and spiritual solution. So, this particular verse which we are now doing is, Krishna says, I enter into each planet and by my energy they stay in orbit. So, for a materialist, it's very difficult to understand this. This is how the world is made. They take a telescope, they take a microscope, they observe everything, they try to understand, they try to analyze, and they try to arrive at conclusions and solutions and inferences and so on and so forth. They try to use logic and so many other things. Calculate. Actually, it is hair splitting and brain racking. So there is one very simple story by which we can explain this to children and to those of us who are children on the platform of spiritual education. So what is that story? This is known as the story of a person known as Alsi. Alsi means? Lazy. So there was one person who was prone to be lazy. So he was sitting under a tree. And when he was sitting under a tree, he saw that he was sitting under a tree of berries, small fruits. And on the opposite side, he saw that there was one creeper. A creeper was growing on a thatched roof. And on that thatched roof, he saw a huge pumpkin which was growing out of the creeper. And he thought, these berries are so small. They are growing on trees. And look at that pumpkin. It is so huge. And it is growing on a creeper. But just see the size of this pumpkin. It is so big. If only these pumpkins would grow on the tree, we would have so much of food. But just see, these small berries are growing on these trees and this huge pumpkin is growing just on a creeper. So he said, what kind of creation is this? And he went into a deep sleep because there was a nice breeze, very cool and comfortable. And suddenly, his sweet sleep and dream was shattered. Why? There was a strong whiff of wind and all the berries started falling down. A few of the berries fell on his head, and he was rudely woken up from his deep sleep. And when he got up, he just said, "Thank God, there are no pumpkins on the trees. Otherwise, my head would have been split now. Such heavy pumpkin falling from the top." So what we have to understand is, God's creation is perfect. From our self-centered point of view, when we try to look at the creation, we will find 1,000 faults in it. Why is this like that? Why is that like that? But if you look at it from a higher spiritual perspective, everything has been made by God just the way it should be. Nothing is out of place. Nothing is wrong. Everything is perfectly correct. That's what we have to understand. In fact, sometimes we meet with accidents. And when we meet with accidents, we feel, oh, something has gone wrong. But actually, we should know that nothing in this world ever goes wrong. In fact, by the Lord's arrangement, everything is engineered to perfection. You may wonder, how is this? Somebody meets with an accident, he breaks a leg, and you say that is perfect. How can that be? This is making or stretching logic to the limit of illogic. I'll give you a small story which will explain this point very nicely. There was a farmer, and he had a wife and he had a child. So he was living very comfortably. Everything was going on very nicely with him. So people in the village, they came and told, "You're so fortunate. You got a land, you got a farm, you got a wife, you got a child, you have a horse." In China, they use horses to plow the land. So you have a horse, and now you can plow your land very nicely. Everything is comfortable for you. But that farmer was a wise man. He said, "Good fortune, bad fortune, who knows?" So he went down on his knees, he raised his hands up to the sky, and he said, "It's all the mercy of the Lord. Who knows? It's good fortune, bad fortune." So, as luck would have it, after some time, his wife died. So the whole village came to him. "Oh, my dear farmer, your wife has died. How sad it is. How unfortunate. Such a big tragedy. How will you now look after your small child? How will you bring him up?" Again he said, "Good fortune, bad fortune, who knows?" After a few days, his horse also ran away. When his horse also ran away, they said, "There's a double tragedy now. First you lost your wife, now you lost your horse. Now you can't maintain your house, now you can't maintain your livelihood. What will you do? How will you survive?" Again he said, "Good fortune, bad fortune, who knows?" After a few days, the male horse which had run away came back with 5 female horses from the forest. And now he had 6 horses. So the whole village came to him. "Oh, my dear farmer, how fortunate you are. You have got a windfall of a gain. You have got 6 horses." And they were all telling, "Your fortune is so good." Again the farmer said, "Good fortune, bad fortune, who knows?" Then what happened? His little boy, he started to train those wild horses. So he brought the harness and he tried to harness the horse. As he was sitting on the horse, trying to tame that wild horse, he was thrown off the back of that horse and he broke his leg. The whole village again came. "Oh, my dear farmer, your little boy has broken his leg. Now he may become limp for the rest of his life. What will you do? Such a big tragedy has befallen you." Again he said, "Good fortune, bad fortune, who knows?" After a few days, the king of the country came. He came to every village. And all the able-bodied youngsters were taken away to be recruited into the army. He said, "We are going to fight a war, and I want all the able-bodied youngsters." All the young boys of the village were taken away, excepting this boy, because he had broken his leg. Again, the farmers and villagers came and they told him, "Oh, my dear farmer, you are now fortunate. You have your son with you. We are all unfortunate. We have lost our sons." Again, he said, "Good fortune, bad fortune, who knows?" So you see how from time to time, from the limited perspective of that point of time, if you see, it is either good or it is bad. But from a retrospect angle, when you see, the same good fortune becomes bad fortune and the same bad fortune becomes good fortune. So this is how we should understand Lord's creation is perfect. We can oscillate between the pendulum of good and bad. But He is on the pivot from which the pendulum is hanging. Ever the same, unfluctuating. That is His position. We have to come to that position and appreciate His splendor, His greatness. So in this section of the Bhagavad Gita, the Lord is describing His position as the maintainer. So if we begin to understand His splendor as the maintainer, so we should understand for all the things that we need in our lives, we are dependent on everything that is provided naturally to us. But it doesn't happen automatically. It is coming because somebody intends it to happen. And who is that person who has got that supreme good intention for the welfare of whole society? It is the Supreme Lord. So therefore we have to understand how we are entirely dependent on Him. And then it becomes easy to surrender to Him. If you know His opulences, if you know our interdependence on Him, our complete dependence on Him, then it becomes easy to surrender to His supreme will. And it is only by that process of surrender that we can break free from this complicated banyan tree into which we have got caught up, this material world. It is compared to this banyan tree. And this entire chapter is an explanation. The chapter begins, Urdhva Mula Adhashakam. It starts from that. That means an inverted reflection of the tree. In this world, everything is inverted. Love of God is the topmost thing in the spiritual world. But in this world, it is at the base, at the bottom. And love for the opposite sex is topmost in this world. The world is driven by the sex desire. So people are driven by these petty considerations. But these things have no value in the spiritual world. Krishna performed the Ras Leela. So the materialists interpret the Ras Leela as attraction between the opposite sexes. But actually, elevated souls like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, sannyasis who have nothing to do with the material world or with the mundane attraction of the opposite sex, they are glorifying the Ras Leela. Why? Because the Ras Leela actually signifies the eternal quest, desire and yearning of the spirit soul for the Supreme Lord, the Super Soul. Atma and Paramatma. It is the attraction that is the sustaining force and that is the supreme force. That is known as the Adiras in the spiritual world. So you can see what is topmost in the spiritual world is considered as very, very unimportant in this material world, and what in this material world is considered as unimportant or important is the least importance in the spiritual world. Therefore, this world is considered to be an inverted reflection. So if you try to analyze this world, you will be completely baffled. You will get to nowhere. That is why Prabhupada says, even in the ordinary parlance, when people want to explain things, they say, if you have a problem where you are not able to get a solution, they say, take an out-of-the-box solution. Don't they say that? Out of the box. Think out of the box. So that is exactly what Krishna is doing. He says, think out of the material strata. Come to the strata of the spiritual world. From there, if you start viewing things, everything is in perfect landscape. Everything looks perfectly. You can see everything in its proper perspective. In relief, you can see things in their proper places. And then you are able to make sense of things as it is and as it should be. And not as you see and as you desire it to be. That is what it is explained, that if you see the reality on the mirror of your self-centered desires, then it will look to be perverted. That is the meaning of this. Inverted reflection. Okay. Now, then let's come to the last verse of today that we are doing. Aham vaishvanaro bhutva praninam dehamashrita pranapanna samayukta pachamannam chaturvidham. The translation is, I am the fire of digestion in the bodies of all living entities, and I join with the air of life, outgoing and incoming, to digest the four kinds of foodstuff. To very shortly put it, Krishna is explaining here that I am the fire of digestion. This is such a process It is an involuntary process. Once you put the food in your mouth, you have no control over that. It has to get digested on its own, otherwise we are helpless. Right? If the food is not getting digested, we are simply helpless. We run to a doctor. If the doctor is sometimes not able to treat, there are patients who have recurring and long-standing complaints of digestion. They are miserable. They can't eat this, they can't eat that, they can't eat so many things, they can't eat things which are half-cooked, they can't eat things which are full-boiled. So many conditions, ifs and buts. There is a very narrow margin within which they have to operate. There are so many such problems people encounter at different times. So we understand that what is that power of digestion, from where is it coming? Here Krishna is specifically stating, I am that power of digestion. What happens when old age sets in? The power of digestion becomes stronger and stronger. What happens? Becomes weaker and weaker. Jataragni becomes Mandagni. That fire of digestion becomes dim. And the ability to digest becomes less. And the ability to sustain life also starts going down. People become weak and gradually they perish. This is old age. So Krishna is explaining that He is that power which keeps everything going. So we have to understand. And to understand how in our day-to-day life we are ignoring that which is most important and giving importance to that which is not so important. There is a beautiful story. I am sure most of you must have heard this story. But just in the proper context, let us recollect that story once again. This is the story of the king and his four wives. Okay? So, there was once a king and he had four wives. I'll make it very brief. So this king, one day when it was announced that, oh dear king, the physician came and told him that now you have very less time to live in this world. So your end is approaching. So the king started to think deeply and he called for his four wives. And he told his wives that I have been told that it is time for me to leave. So therefore, he started requesting all of them that he would not like that they should leave him. He wanted them to come with him. So he said that now I have to depart from this world. So I have always been so very loving and affectionate to each one of you. So now I am asking from each one of you that you please reciprocate the love and affection I have been giving to you all through. So now I want you to be with me and come with me. So what happens? His fourth wife immediately retorts, forget it. I am not going to come with you. He was shocked. He felt completely cheated. So then he went to the third wife and he told her, my dear wife, I really need you. I have been showering so much of affection on you. So, she said, try your luck elsewhere. I can't go with you. He said, you too are going to desert me. What is this? So then, quite dejected, he went to his second wife, hoping at least she would take care of him. So, she was more considerate than the fourth and the third wives. But she said, my dear king, I am helpless. He said, you are helpless. You can't come with me. Then he sat with his head between his two hands, completely defeated. He heard a faint voice calling out to him. And he turned around. He saw it was his first wife. He had actually neglected her throughout his life. He had never paid attention to her. She came. She said, my dear king, I won't leave you. I'll come with you. in death also I will not leave you, I'll be with you. He became very grateful. He turned to her and he said, oh, I am eternally grateful to you. And he saw how he was cheated by his three other wives. But then, who is this king and who are these four wives? Actually, each one of us is that king. And who are these four wives? The fourth wife is the body. When a person dies, obviously the soul leaves the body. The body cannot go. And the third wife is the possessions. What happens? You have a hefty bank account. But the minute the death certificate is issued and the banker gets the death certificate, he sees who is the nominee and transfers all the assets in that account to the nominee. So, the third wife actually told him that, I will find another husband. When you die, I will take another husband. This is the meaning of that. The possessions go to another person. They don't remain with you. And who is the second wife? The second wife, the family and the friends of the king. They were more considerate. Because they go up to the graveyard, they go up to the crematorium, and the wife goes up to the doorstep, that is what is explained according to the tradition. She doesn't go to the crematorium. The friends and the relatives, they go to the crematorium. And the son actually goes to the funeral pyre. He lights the funeral pyre. So that is the farthest any other relative or friend can go. They can't go beyond that. Then who is that first wife who said, I will never leave you. In death also, I will be with you. Even when a man and woman are married according to the Christian tradition, what do they say? We will remain together till death do us part. Isn't it? So a wife also will part at the time of death. But who is this wife who says, I will not leave your company even at the time of death? That is the Paramatma or the Super Soul that accompanies every soul in this material world. And it is this aspect which we actually neglect in our day-to-day life. We never pay attention to the Lord, to God, who is always accompanying us in everything that we are doing. Even when we don't know, even when we are sleeping, our brain is functioning, our heart is functioning. These are known as involuntary functions. If you have to be conscious, you can never sleep. When you sleep, you get rejuvenated. Then, when you are asleep, when you are not aware of yourself, who is taking care of you? Who is keeping these things going? It is the Paramatma, the Super Soul within the heart, who sees to everything that is required by you. So this is our situation in life. This is how Krishna is revealing his splendor to each one of us through the annals of the Bhagavad Gita, through all these verses. He's telling us how much we are dependent on him, but still we never pay attention to him throughout the course of our life. And we always think we are independent, and where is God? We question his existence, we question his whereabouts, we question his authority, we do not want to surrender to him, and we are like that foolish child who does not know how much the parents are providing for the child, and he is always complaining and crying. So we have to come out of this, and therefore he is helping us. He is revealing himself, he is explaining to us our position, and he is revealing his splendor to us. Hare Krishna. I think we can stop here. Are there any questions or any suggestions or any points, any contributions? Kirtan, anybody can come? So I think we can stop here now. In another 10 minutes, Darshan will be opening. So very shortly, we'll have some Kirtan. Hare Krishna. Thank you.